Hello there, Salim Omar here from the CPA Marketing Genius Podcast. Welcome to another amazing episode. I've got a brilliant guest with us. His name is Nate Lind. Nate, welcome.
Thank you very much, Salim. I appreciate you having me on here.
Man, I am super excited to pick your brain on different things that we're going to get on. But let me quickly share with the listeners your quick bio, and then I'm going to ask you for your backstory. Nate, an American entrepreneur, triathlete, author, and business broker. Reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad inspired Lind to dream of financial freedom and passive income. He exited his first company in 2016, which was an e-commerce technology to a shopping cart platform. Lind learned that selling a company and using the proceeds to buy passive income was far easier than trying to run it passively. And so, Nate, I'm really excited. And, you know, the reason I'm excited to have you talk to our CPA firm owners, our listenership, is because they work with small businesses and there's lots of, you know, bad advice, misguidance when it comes to selling the business. I really want to hear it from you, somebody who has been doing this for a number of years, you know, everything about selling their business, increasing its valuation and so forth. So before we get into the questions, I'd like to ask you for your backstory. Give us a quick overview of your backstory.
Absolutely. I'm really passionate about your audience. They are the number one compadre or vendors, you know, that I work with. Sellers need to have professionally prepared financials. And so let me give you a little bit of my backstory. I was an e-commerce entrepreneur for over a decade. I sold a lot of vitamins and supplements direct to consumers. And I had a fantastic CFO and CPA and finance team helping me with that. And through that process, I learned so much about income statements and balance sheets, much of which I find that my clients don't know a whole lot about. But going through that e-commerce career, I found the owners of Website Closers, and they alerted me to the massive pool of buyers there are out there for companies like these. I didn't believe it at first. It was over multiple meetings that I realized and hearing from other people who had sold their businesses with Website Closers that I realized this was like really serious. And over some time, I developed a relationship with Jason and Ron. I bought a franchise and started my own brokerage. And now I am a guide for entrepreneurs that are in the internet, technology, e-commerce, and then business to business, or all kind of around internet technology, helping them exit their businesses. Been at it for a couple of years now. Website Closers in total, we've got over 100 companies for sale at any given point in time. We focus only on lower middle market companies. So these tend to be smaller businesses between $1 million and $150 million in size. Right now, with about 100 businesses for sale, we have $525 million worth of businesses for sale on our marketplace. We're like an MLS, like for the real estate, but we're like an MLS for these internet technology and digital businesses.
Yeah. And, you know, CPAs, they're a trusted source. They're probably the first advisor person that the business owner is going to talk to when they're thinking about selling their business. And so I want to, you know, Nate, give us some guidance so that when a CPA is in front of their client who's got all these questions about selling their business and exiting it. So I've got like specific questions I want to ask you and pick your brain. That's going to equip our listener, the CPA, when they're sitting in front of their client. So first question is, like, what are some key mistakes that you see entrepreneurs make when it comes to selling their business?
The number one biggest mistake my clients make is they have complicated or sloppy or unprofessionally prepared financial statements or financial documents. If they're doing it themselves, or if they just, you know, cut corners and have a very minimal income statement, you know, with very vague chart of accounts with categories, that's my biggest challenge. My communication and partnership, I look at it with the CPA firms and the accounting professionals that work with my clients already. It's exactly that. I can't sell these businesses without your audience, without your audience of CPAs and advisors. I have to have professionally prepared financials. Buyers will not feel that there's any credibility. They won't feel there's any value to the business unless they have the form and format of an export out of QuickBooks or Xero or another accounting system. And then having the granularity, but simple granularity in the chart of accounts for expenses. I spend a lot of time guiding my clients and then referring them back to their CPA and their bookkeeper to get a little bit more specification or specificity with the chart of accounts. For example, legal. Legal could mean six different things. Is it estate planning legal, which is an add back? Our client, at this point I'm speaking, our mutual client, because that's who they are, our mutual client will get more money for their business if we categorize expenses that are legitimate estate planning expenses with that level of detail versus if there's like a lawsuit. A lawsuit may or may not be an add back. An attorney who's performing services like sending cease and desist letters or demand letters for competitors to stop what they're doing, that's an expense. That would be an ongoing cost that a buyer would also have. So that's an example of probably the number one biggest mistake that it comes for folks that are selling their business. And the second mistake is waiting too long. If they have kind of a rise in their business and then it's starting to decline, when they want lower middle market businesses in general sell well when they're growing, when they're growth based, they don't do as well. And sometimes are nearly impossible to sell when they're trending down. Those are the two biggest mistakes I see over and over again.
Great points there. Now, one of the common questions that I get as a CPA is, you know, what's my company worth? Yeah, that's a question we get from our business clients. And how is it determined?
Yep, there's two parts to that. So I need to start with the seller discretionary earnings or EBITDA of the company. I need to know the cash flow. What's been the cash flow into the owner's pocket over the last 12 months? And I'd like to see the last 2 or 3 years. Sometimes it's a luxury. We sell companies that are only a year or two old. That's more difficult. But if there's a company that's 3, 4, 5 or older, if I can see the financial statements, the tax returns for the company for each fiscal year going back a ways, and then compare that to the trailing 12 months with income statements and balance sheets to match, that's going to help me figure out, okay, what's the base number that we're going to start with? And then I have a spreadsheet and a methodology around 27 factors that I will go through an initial consultation call. Kind of like you might do as an initial intake with the client, give them an hour of your time, take a look at what they have, share with them, you know, kind of where they're at. I do the same things. We perform a free business valuation and create a sales plan for them. And with the combination of the factors that I need to understand about, is their business growing? How does their infrastructure look like? What's the past performance look like? What does the future look like? In those 27 factors, once I go through that initial consultation and having the EBITDA, SDE, or cash flow of the business as verified through financial statements, that gives me the confidence to be able to share with our client the trading range of the business.
Great. What's the best time to sell? I mean, earlier you mentioned when, you know, it's growing, and is it clear enough there that if there is, you know, on an upward trend, it's the right time to grow? And what happens if it's stagnant or if it's declining? Should the business owner wait?
Fantastic question. The best time to sell is when things are going great. Usually when you don't want to sell, like when you're not even thinking about it, when the profit's increasing, when the revenue's increasing, when the business has a very stable track record, if it's at least 2 years old, that's the best time to sell. We have buyers that will buy individual owner operated companies. You don't have to have this massive team. I see that as something people think about a lot, is like a myth that I'm constantly busting. They'll think, well, I need to have this large management team, or I need to have this, like all of this infrastructure. For lower middle market companies and small businesses, you do not. I sell a lot of companies that are owner operated. The best time to sell absolutely is when things are going great, when you don't need to sell the business or you're thinking things are going so swimmingly. That it also gives you the potential and the opportunity to be able to walk away from any deal. You don't need somebody's money to make it. On the converse, it is very difficult when the business is declining. If it's declining, usually you need to wait. Most buyers do not have the risk appetite to jump in and turn around the business. They'd love to do that as a consultant. You know, they'll jump in and get some guaranteed, you know, revenue or income as a consultant. And I see that sometimes as a play that buyers will do, looking at declining companies. They'll say, we'll consult with you for a while you turn this around. And that's not a winning strategy for anybody involved. That's, in my opinion, a waste of everyone's time. Businesses that are plateauing, they do have market value. They won't be at the same multiple as growing companies, but we do have buyers that are interested in those, and those transact quite frequently.
Got it. Now, you know, just looking at kind of overall, you know, trends in the economy, you know, we are in a recession. Talk about that. We read that in the news. What's the market demand for companies in a period like this?
It's a fantastic question. We hear about this a lot, right? We're in a recession. You know, cost of capital definitely has increased, and that is changing the valuations of deals because buyers are having to pay more for the money they're using to leverage and acquire these companies. However, I've had three businesses that we've listed for sale in the last 2 weeks get over 100 inquiries from buyers. So I'm not seeing a decrease in buyer activity. And it's very interesting because as this recession continues to create, it's almost like agreement in the public's eye that things are not going well or things that are going to get even worse. We're just not seeing that in buyer appetite. It seems like buyers tend to focus on what it was that made them money in the beginning of their careers, and it's usually entrepreneurship. So even if there's fluctuations in the financial markets and stock markets and other places, the real estate market and those sorts of things that are kind of flipping up and down and moving around, generally has done well for most of our buyers is their background in entrepreneurship. So they are continually seeking entrepreneurial investments like acquiring businesses.
Yeah. Now, what are deal structures like? Is it cash or is it earnout or is it a mixture of the two?
Yeah, it is definitely a mixture for my clients. And I tend to focus only on growing companies and companies that have a very stable track record. They tend to command a large portion of cash at closing. We see upwards of 50, 60, 70%. My average over the last 3 years has been 70% of the enterprise value of the business as cash at closing. And then the remaining 30% is a combination of rolling some equity, some seller financing, potentially an earnout or a joint venture, kind of a revenue share model for some additional compensation after the closing.
Got it. Yeah. What can a business owner do to increase the value?
The number one thing they can do is focus on growing the profit. If they can just knuckle down and continue to grow the profit of the business, that will have the biggest effect because that's going to increase the seller discretionary earnings. And so for every, let's say we're at a 4x multiple, and a lot of these businesses will transact between 3 and 5x multiple. Growing businesses can sometimes achieve that 4 to 6x range. Even though cost of capital has gone up a little bit, we see that compressing slightly. But to increase the value, grow that profit, continue the track record of profitability, because that's reducing the risk for the buyer. That's what they're focused on. They're looking at these transactions from a risk perspective and a risk versus reward perspective. So the more profitable they are and the older they are, the less risky they are. The last thing that's really helpful too is preparing the business for handoff. Think about, what is this business going to look like without you as the owner or your client as the owner? I'm speaking, in terms of them. If they can consider how to hand off the business by creating some standard operating procedures or outsourcing various components of the business, maybe that's being performed by the founder, finding different ways to reduce the founder's involvement is also very helpful for the value. I can get into very specifics too for the CPA firm's clients around like what specifically should they be doing. And I do a lot of exit planning as a course of my consultation completely for free for clients who meet a threshold of $500,000 in profit or 2 years old. That's kind of where I step in to really serve the marketplace with my buyers.
Got it. Yeah. And really, I mean, in order to increase profits, and you mentioned earlier granularity, having that simple granularity. And this is where the CPA firm owner comes in is, not only helping the client on a day-to-day basis with compliance and all that stuff, but it's really looking at the future and meeting with them and, some level of interim, a fractional CFO, looking at the financials, profitability, and saying, all right, how are we doing? Where are the profit leaks? Where are the opportunities? And really, a client of mine of, CPA firms may not be ready to sell today or in 3 months, but we can certainly position them for an exit in 2 years or 3 years and that. So
that's exactly right. And I've got some tips that I could share. And there's a chapter in my book that's specific around what are some of the labeling and specificity we should get into with the chart of accounts to prepare for that. In fact, that's making me think I should PDF like that chapter and share it with you, and you can share it with your audience because there's some, it's really simple. And that's a revenue opportunity for your audience. That we frequently advise our selling clients to go back to their CPA advisors and ask for some more specificity in their income statements. And the accounting firm should charge them for it. So there's an opportunity for some incremental revenue for your audience to, you know, spend a couple of hours. Sometimes it's multiple hours going through and creating that specificity and then going back through the specific transactions and categorizing them correctly. And I will say this every time to my client, I will advise them to do that because even if it's, you know, $5,000 in additional cost to their CPA advisor, it's going to net them tens of thousands, maybe $100,000 or more in exit value when that level of detail is done. Because the more simple and specific the financials are, the more likely I'll find a buyer who's willing to look through all of the financial records and agree to the sales price.
Mm. So I asked you, what are some of the things that increases the value? I'm going to flip that question. What decreases the value?
The number one thing there is complicated financials, unprofessionally prepared or sloppy looking financials, or just like something kind of done on the back of like, you know, an Excel file that in some cases is a deal killer. That's how critical it is. That's the importance of the services your audience provides. I cannot stress that enough. I can't sell these companies without your audience and your listeners. Mm. If the CPA partners and the accounting firm partners have not been involved, if there's not just very, you know, detailed and astute level of workmanship that's gone into the financials, cannot sell the business. And the business is worthless. It's absolutely worthless. The other huge decrease, and we're seeing this, you know, because the market is changing and some e-commerce businesses have done well through the pandemic and then have seen some slowness since then. But another big decreaser in value is that the business is receding in profitability or the business is declining. These are the things that clearly communicate what's the cash flow of the business and then what's the trend of the business. So if the financials are well prepared and detailed, that gives us a window into the cash flow of the business. So a buyer can even make an informed decision and bid on the business. If there's a trend of the business and its profitability is receding, I won't take the listing. I'll pat them on the back and encourage them and offer them some suggestions as to where they can go and what they can do. Unfortunately, for these lower middle market businesses without real estate as an asset, you know, in real estate, it's much different. But in these cash flow based businesses, the cash flow is the value of the business. And if it's decreasing, that's going to be a big challenge. If there's not much defensibility around the business, let's just say it's an e-commerce business or it's a business-to-business services, you know, digital marketing company or something like that, and it's very easy to replicate, that's not a very desirable business for a buyer. There could be penalties kind of associated to it from a buyer or outright dismissal of the business in general because they just don't feel like it's something that they could take the risk to put money into and then continue the success of it going forward.
Right. That's great. Wow. This is amazing. We're coming close to the tail end of this interview. One important question, you know, in your experience, Nate, what are some of the factors that tend to kill a deal? Like, you know, buyer and seller, they've come to the table and agreed on a price and so forth. And now it's like, what could happen that will result in this not moving forward?
Yeah, there's some really critical partnerships involved in the M&A process. The accounting firm and CPA are absolutely critical for this being successful. The deal attorney as well. So typically, like in real estate, there'll be attorneys involved. They're usually drafting up the agreements that transfer all the assets of the business. I have seen time and time again using an attorney that is maybe more focused on real estate or might be focused on a different like niche of law, and they're not focused on transactional law in the M&A space. They blow up deals all the time. And that's super frustrating, but that's a big one. If the person, the client is generally disagreeable or unlikable or challenging to communicate with or are off-putting in conversations, that can really scare away buyers, especially if there's going to be some partnership after the transaction. Even the small business and lower middle market range of M&A, people want to work with people they like. They don't want to work with jerks and assholes. So that can kill deals quite a bit too. And I probably sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but declining profit in businesses are deal killers too. And frequently we don't know that until we're midway into a transaction. The business may be growing and being you know, very growth oriented or a stellar business in the beginning. And the M&A process will take 3, 4, 5 months sometimes. And in the midst of that process, if the business starts to decline, that can pause the deal or kill the deal. And that can be quite frustrating for everybody involved too.
Yeah. Well, this was so informative. Really appreciate it. Nate, listeners, if they want to reach out to you, you mentioned a couple of resources. How can they get their hands on any of it or for them to reach out to you?
Absolutely. Best place to reach me is my email address. Old school on that. I love email. You can reach me at it's Nate, N-A-T-E, at websiteclosers.com. I'd love any referrals that your audience have. I will refer the client back to you to do some additional rework if it's needed. And 99% of the time it is. You'll have me as your advocate, continuing to communicate to your client their need for your involvement and usually a deeper involvement through the process. So, and we also pay a referral fee for any of our referral partners. And it's substantial. We send out tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars per transaction. It's 10% of our commission is what we refer back to our referral partners. So there's, I think, a fantastic financial opportunity for your audience to use us as a referral partner. We have thousands of successful transactions in our closed deal Rolodex, and happy to talk with any of your clients, your audience about those types of partnerships. And we would be blessed to receive any referrals that come from your network.
Awesome. Great. We'll have all those links and email address and so forth in the show notes. Nate, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the CPA Marketing Genius podcast. If you'd like to hear more episodes, you can find them at cpamarketinggenius.simplecast.com or on your favorite podcast directory. Don't forget to like and subscribe. If you want to learn more about Saleem and CPA Marketing Genius, please visit cpamarketinggenius.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on the CPA Marketing Genius podcast.